I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With Rhys Darby and Dan Schreiber.
Well, elongate my column with a series of traditional neck rings, then tape a cushion to my back and throw me in the lock, cause we are back!
Oh, man.
Wow!
Worth it to be back just for that. Show's over. Yeah. That's all I needed.
The folks have waited long enough. Of course, we did the huge comeback special and then literally disappeared. Much... like the great Nessie rearing its huge neck out of the lock and everyone finally going, oh my God, they're back. Everyone took photos, drew sketches, tried to go for a ride on it. And then unfortunately, because it was such a big splash, it went down and it really was never seen again.
It's gone.
Till now.
We just realized how good coming back felt. And we're like, every time we should have a comeback.
It feels good coming back. It doesn't feel good staying.
No.
Being predictable is so boring.
It's like when you go to a party, you know, and you're late to arrive and then everyone goes, oh my God, he's finally here. And then you kind of, you know, you mingle for a bit and people get used to you. And then you go, you know what, I'm going to disappear again because I like the feeling of when I arrived. So you go and hide in the kitchen for a bit, or you go and have a look around the house and have a bit of a snoop around, find some hidden beers. And then you turn up again another hour and a half later. Oh! It's constantly having that feeling.
That's a great idea. I'm doing that at your next birthday party.
I like that you think you're being invited. Now, so where are we basically? Okay, well, I'm still in LA. Now, Dan, where are you? You're home?
I'm in London, but I mean, partially the reason we haven't been back is I've been on tour for the last month, and...
Have you been touring the Cryptid Factor without us?
It's much easier without you guys. All this bullshit banter about, let's come back an hour later to a party. I can just get on with it, tell the facts, do the stories.
Straight to the facts.
Get out of there.
That'd be amazing. We're like, Rhys and I walking along and see a sign saying, the Cryptid Factor live at the Hollywood Bowl. We're like, oh, got to go to that. That'd be amazing.
I love that show.
Just you on stage.
But yeah, I've been on tour. Can I tell you a really cool thing of this tour is, so it's with the other podcast that I do, the Lesser Podcast. And in the first half of it.
The fish thing.
In the first half, I talk about local Guinness World Record holders. And I sort of I celebrate the town and the cities that I'm in, sort of saying, what a city of champions. And I've found all the world records that they have. So I've been going around the UK meeting, as a result, amazing Guinness World Record holders from each town.
Wow.
So I've met people who've been a part of the longest traveled conga line in the world.
Oh, wow.
So like 11 people.
How long?
So it was only 11 people, but they traveled, I think it was like 17 miles. So like for 17 miles.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. But they did it on like one strip. So they just went back and forth. So it was, it's not like they disappeared 17 miles into the distance. It was just like, it was like 500 meters back and forth. I met a guy who has the world record for flipping the most beer mats in one go and catching them in his hand.
Oh, we did that at my company, Augusto. We printed beer mats and invited all of our friends and clients around and did that competition.
Oh, really?
I'd never heard of it before, but it's awesome.
How many did you do?
We did. I can't remember exactly. It was like 20 or something like that.
Okay. So this guy flipped with one hand and caught 127 in one go.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Get out of town.
So flipped it using one hand, caught it in one hand, and his name is Matt Hand.
No.
Yeah. Beer Matt Hand, but without the beer.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's been amazing. I've been meeting all these incredible people. I met the daughter of a guy, sadly passed away, who shaved most faces in 1 hour. What do you reckon? What do you reckon that number is? How many faces do you think he shaved? 1 hour.
Well, is it with like a hand razor?
It's a hand razor. The photo I found of him online was with a machete, but apparently he used to attach a little razor to a machete and scare people by shaving them with it. Yeah. What do you reckon you could do in an hour?
In an hour? Oh, you'd probably do quite a few, really, if he was very proficient. I would say 35.
I'd say a bit higher. I'd say 45.
I'm pretty sure it was 1,999.
No! Come on!
And he did it on a military base.
Like, were they good shaves, though? Because, like, or is it just, like, with, you know, big clumps left here and there?
He said it, though. You said military base.
Military base. So, yeah, tight mustaches. And I think he did three, like, quack, 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 to get the mustache off. And he tried it again 5 years later to beat his record. And he got to 1,990 with 15 minutes to go, but couldn't go on because he ran out of hairy faces. They just had no more. And people were coming back second time round, third time round, and they were like, I'm sorry, you're just shaving bare skin here. So so
he's just wiping off shaving foam.
Yeah. So yeah, it's been amazing meeting like true champions around the world.
That's so cool. What a great idea. What are you going to do when we go on tour? Dan, what's your, like, when we eventually.
This is the Cryptid Factor tour. What are you talking about?
Oh, right.
This is it.
Sorry. Yeah, right. Gotcha. Well, it sounds awesome. Can't wait for you to come to New Zealand.
All right. So just to briefly sum it up, you're in London. You're on tour.
Yeah.
You're having a great time. Buttons is heading back to New Zealand. He's in New Zealand. He's
in
the quarantine hotel. Yeah. And he'll be there for 2 weeks. I'm summing up your bit.
Oh, thanks.
We haven't got time for you to talk. And I'm in LA. I finished my the TV show I was working on. So I'm kind of in between jobs as usual for an actor, which is good. Get a bit of rest.
That's great.
And so finally, hopefully, definitely from next week onwards, and this is never a promise, but it looks like the Cryptid Factor are back in the game.
Woo!
Yes.
Yes. After the world's shortest podcast season of one episode.
yeah.
And then we're back. New series.
This is episode one of series 17.
And then I guess there's only one thing to do, which is to kick off the greatest.
That's why we don't go on tour. That's why we don't go on tour.
Yeah.
I can't make my words work. It's really painful.
Yeah, let me do it. Well, that's here. We'll edit in here. Well, that's really great and exciting to hear about all your news, guys. But now.
That's even worse. Okay, you have a go, Dan. Dan, you have a go.
Okay, well, that was a great catch up. Good to be back for Series 16. But now it's time for Weekly World Weird News.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one.
Well, that was good. But you said it's good to be back for Series 16, and we're Series 17. I'll have a go. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is so exciting to be back together, guys.
This is a new segment, by the way, where we get to all have a round of see if we can actually link into the actual segment.
Really. We're never actually going to start the segment. Guys, that's so exciting to all be back together.
Mm.
And now I guess there's only one thing to do.
What's that?
It's to kick into the greatest segment of all time.
What's it called?
It's Weekly Worldwide News.
Good. That was pretty good, but you don't have to actually say it because the actual segment sting will say it. So it was so close there, but now it's my turn. Wow. As always, guys, I love catching up with your fascinating updates on what you've been doing with your lives. But now it's time for the one and only segment we're all waiting for.
What is it?
Weekly World Weird News.
It's crazy. It's freaky. Watch out.
Do you want to kick it off, Reese?
Do you want to do some headlines?
Yeah, let's do some headlines as per usual.
Let's do some headlines. Bird of the Year controversy after contesters won by a bat.
No, that was my one. Come on. Shit. Okay, well, that's a great headline, but I had two others to go along with it.
Oh, that's not like you.
Well, no, exactly, but they're all linked together because my headline was multiple competitions with no. It's really hard, guys.
It's been a while. Don't get too nervous.
I can't remember how to talk.
We'll.
Okay. Multiple global competitions thrown into disarray as the world is challenged with its challenges.
As the world
says, the overly challenged Buttons Kirkbeck facing his own challenges during this challenging time.
It's very challenging for me to talk, okay?
So what was it again? Say it again.
I can't.
The world
is
thrown into disarray as it is challenged with challenges.
Yeah, its challenges are challenged.
Oh, okay.
With Bird of the Year challenge, for one.
Oh.
Old Person of the Year award challenged.
Right.
And finally, Porridge of the Year challenge is challenged.
Wow.
Wow.
All works out really well because Dan was initially talking about the accomplishments of those that try to do challenges with the Guinness Book of Records. And now all of a sudden our news is about how challenging times are challenging challenges.
And I'm being challenged. Because I've got to remember how to speak, and I'm struggling with that.
Well, you're the only one of us that's being diagnosed as actually challenged, aren't you? Now, what have you got, Dan?
I've got two. One is headliney, which is, hippos that used to belong to Pablo Escobar have been challenged for hippo status and have been recognized as humans. Instead of hippos.
What?
Yeah.
What?
So that's one. The other option.
Well, that's very challenging.
Wow.
For me to believe.
And then here's a challenging one. There's a new book out by David Copperfield, the magician. And so this was just part of a headline, but I just thought I can't not mention this on the show. So the location of the world's largest private collection of magic memorabilia, it turns out, is located in a Las Vegas warehouse, which has been disguised as a fake mail order lingerie shop and is only accessed by pressing a hidden button in a mannequin's bra.
Oh,
and that gets the doors open.
Come on!
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
So that's a challenge to get into.
You get the Guinness Award for breast news article, I'm telling you right now. And I think we should save yours till last.
So what you're basically saying is, to get into the world's largest collection of magic memorabilia is very challenging.
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
Of course.
I did say that literally a second ago, yeah.
No, but it's challenging.
Yeah.
Listeners, it has been a while, as you can tell. And some of us are rusty and some of us are more challenged. Some of us were already challenged and now are facing a new challenge, which is coming back rusty.
Oh, I'm exhausted.
Okay, now some of you may and others may not know, but New Zealand holds a Bird of the Year competition every year, and it's a big deal, isn't it, Leon?
It's huge. Everybody talks about it, honestly.
It's on the news. Everyone
tweets about it.
Because what's that?
They tweet about it.
Oh, there it is. Some of us aren't as rusty because some of us have been on tour with our other more popular podcast. So that's going to show tonight. But yeah, basically, this Bird of the Year competition, it's a big deal. Everyone votes. New Zealand, as you know or may know, is full of birds. It's a kingdom of birds. It's our birds are our greatest animal. It's the one we always rave about because we have so many of the native birds and their wonderful shapes and sizes and everyone has a favorite. And so every year they do it. It's a fun social competition for the country.
They actually take votes globally, though, as well.
They do too, yeah.
58,000 votes come in from all around the world.
Yeah, and I'm sure the winner changes every year, but there's a lot of conservation money that gets put down for this to save the birds that are endangered, right?
That's right.
So let's have a look at this news with regards to this year's competition.
Yeah.
This year's Bird of the Year saw an unlikely winner capture voters' hearts. The inclusion of a bat has proven to be a controversial choice. And that's not surprising because last time I checked, a bat was not a bird. A bat, of course, for those of you that don't know, and I'm sure that you guys do, is a mammal.
Yes, that's right.
But the success for those pushing to get more attention for the mammal is now in serious trouble.
To say that again. The people pushing
I'm gonna read
for that
again and so that it makes more sense, but also is less dramatic.
Exactly. You're not so much rusty. You're more just sort of seized. You just need a little squirt of lubricant.
We can share this article because I know you had it as well and you were let down by me taking it after you foolishly asked what was my news article first, knowing that probably you should have just told us what yours was at the beginning, thus leaving me in the poo.
Well, it is controversial, this, because not only is the bat a mammal and not a bird, but also it's controversial because there's so many endangered bird species that need the attention. Mm. There is literally a bird called the fairy tern that has a group of conservationists watching the families. There's about three little nests of these fairy terns, and there are people guarding them 24/7. And so people are coming out saying, well, yeah, great and all, put a bat in there, but what about all these other birds? So it's actually, there's a lot of heat in it, I tell you.
Yeah.
It's divided the nation, hasn't it, Reese?
Yeah, if you read this article, apparently. I mean, I've been living outside the nation for a while now. Now, if you want to do a share screen, we can have a look at the animal in question. There it is.
Oh. Isn't that gorgeous?
How could you not love that? I mean.
Sweet. So Peka Peka Tua Rua is its name. Long-tailed bat.
You know the size of this bat?
I'm guessing very small. It's a fruit bat, right?
It's the size of a human thumb and a wingspan of a human hand.
Okay.
It is tiny, tiny little beautiful thing.
There it is, guys.
Oh, look.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you should enter that in next year.
Reese, for those that can't see, is doing the classic butterfly with, you know, linking your thumbs and waving your hands. But that would be two Peka Peka Tauroa bats.
Mating, yeah.
Shaking their hands.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think would be more controversial, this bat winning it or Reese entering his own hands pretending to be a bird?
Because they're endangered.
I think the hands would be slightly more controversial.
That's true. Well, and the thing is that for the 58,000 votes that came in for the wide range of beautiful New Zealand birds, the bat actually had a massive lead of 3,000 votes ahead of any other bird.
Wow. That's impressive.
The head of Forest and Bird, and that puts this competition on, said that every year there's controversy. One Twitter user demanded a recount.
Really?
And then another one likened the bat to Australia's participation in the Eurovision Song Contest.
Oh, yeah.
In 2019, the competition had another big stir because they saw a massive influx of votes from Russia. And they literally did an investigation to make sure that the competition wasn't rigged or swayed in some way, much like the American elections.
Yeah.
But they actually verified them and the votes were legit. So a whole bunch of Russian voters came in out of nowhere.
They ought to check this year just to see how many votes came in from Transylvania, if you know what I'm saying. Well, I've got rid of the rust, guys. I am back in the game. Just as Buttons was getting boring there with that news article, which, as you might have noticed, I ended up just giving to him once I realized it was pretty shit. Okay, let's move on to your other thing there, Buttons. Try and redeem yourself with what else was it? Some other competition about
porridge of the year, was it?
Some challenging porridge or something? Let's rock on into that.
It's riveting stuff. It's porridge of the year and old person of the year.
That's the same thing, isn't it? It's got to be the same competition.
Well, it's entered, no doubt, by the same people.
Yeah.
Is it old porridge of the year? Who's the judge, a wolf?
This porridge is really old. Let me see this porridge. Oh, it's a little bit okay, but not quite right.
Before you go too far, you're mixing your metaphors there.
You've mixed the bears who have the porridge with the wolf that eats the old lady in Red Riding Hood. but you've blended them perfectly for the old porridge people. Yeah.
Okay, good. And if you guys hadn't have opened your big snappy mouths, I would have got away with it. Always trying to bring me down, especially in the middle of a great piece.
It's the shittiest Scooby-Doo bust ever.
Who better to inquire about bad metaphor mix-ups than Scooby-Doo?
That's what they do now. They just ruin people's gags at parties.
Yeah.
People's anecdotes. They come up. I'm afraid I'm going to have to stop you there, mate, because actually you've got a different metaphor mix up there.
Wrong metaphor, Swaggy.
Swaggy? Hey, Scooby, you should check these snacks out at this party. Oh, man. They've got twisties. No, if you let me get on with my very important news.
Okay.
The Oldie of the Year competition has been thrown into turmoil this year because the person who was nominated to win it has turned it down, saying with a quote, you're only as old as you feel. Or actually, she said, you're too young at heart. You're only old. She
get
said,
the quote right.
This is the quote. This is how old she is. She was just couldn't get it out.
No, she says you're only as old as you feel. And the person who has turned down this very kind offer of Oldie of the Year, none other than the Queen herself.
Her Majesty.
Right.
Yeah, Her Majesty.
Buttons, just to clarify, is this Oldie of the Year as in the British magazine, The Oldie, or is this?
Yes.
Okay.
That's right.
Well, hang on, I don't know about that. Tell the listeners what the hell this is. There's a magazine called The Oldie about old people?
It's an awesome magazine. So it was a magazine that was set up quite a few years ago by Richard Ingrams, who was the editor of Private Eye magazine. And it's sort of a satirical, it's not really satirical, it's just a magazine for people in their retirement, but written by amazing writers from the UK. So if you bought it and read it, it's just a great magazine, just great articles. Every year they do Oldie of the Year, so they recognize someone who's a bit older and just say, I didn't realize they gave it or tried to give it to the Queen. It's usually for younger people.
Because she's had a hell of a year. She's lost her husband and stuff.
Yeah.
And she's one of the greatest battlers in the world ever, and she's still rocking it. So I can see why they wanted to give it to her.
Yeah, and the honest truth is that she's 95 years old and still kicking ass, as it were.
Turning up to events, wearing those amazing outfits, yeah.
That's right, and also still doing her daily red boxes of official papers. I mean, they're probably just putting colouring in competition papers in there now and stuff for her. But she basically got offered the award and she said, nope, you're only as old as you feel. And she doesn't feel 95. She doesn't feel old, which I think is fantastic.
That's pretty cool.
And she's the longest serving monarch, 70 years in the throne, as it were. So,
and just for you guys, there's another impression of a monarch.
Very much like the bat, the award-winning Pekka Pekka Tolo.
Yeah, I'm
going
to see how many other opportunities I get to do that in the show. This is mainly for the visual Cryptid Nights segment.
Maybe later in the show we can talk about how hot you are and you need to fan yourself, you know, cooler.
Yep, or I could just come up with my own things that might fit better. Okay, so what's the porridge?
Okay, very finally, the World Porridge Making Championship.
Yeah.
This year, which was a virtual event, which is really hard because the judges didn't get to actually taste the porridge that has won the award,
wow.
the glorious Porridge of the Year award, the name of that award, the Golden Spurtle.
The Golden Spurtle.
The award this year was won by Dutch food blogger Miriam Groot.
Great name.
And she won it controversially with a porridge that had white wine and mushrooms as part of the ingredients.
Wow.
Exactly. She made a savory Italian porridge.
Right.
With white wine and mushrooms.
That
and
sounds like an amazing COVID recipe if ever I've seen one. Yeah. You know, when you're in those pandemic times and you just want to add a bit of alcohol to whatever you're making because you're not leaving the house.
That's it. And she also added vegetable stock, lemon zest, and pepper.
Cool.
Wow, I bet it was beautiful.
Well, this is the thing. It's like the judges couldn't taste it. It was all virtual.
So they just imagined that it would be good.
Yes, I guess so.
It sounds good to me. I can see why she won it.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, they're saying it's a version of arancini. Anyway, so you can see all of these awards have been thrown into chaos and disarray.
Yeah, very good.
All these challenges.
Yeah,
very challenged.
I think the spurtle. I think that's your porridge spoon. I think it's like a really big spoon because they're.
I
think I'm right in saying that because they used to be in the UK a thing where a lot of houses would have a porridge drawer in their kitchen. And that's where you would make your porridge. So you didn't make it in like a bowl and have it. You had a physical drawer
in
your kitchen.
Drawer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was so popular. But even when I was a kid, we used to have it. Nana was the one who would definitely have porridge every day. And, you know, and we used to have it only in the winter or whatever. And, I haven't really had it properly since I was a young'un. But I remember the process you go through the milk, making a hole in the middle, putting the wheat germ on, putting the brown sugar on. I miss those times.
Well, have you not had it for so long because you haven't had a spurtle to make it? Maybe you need to go and get yourself a good spurtle.
Oh, yeah.
I really need a good spurtle.
I know what to get you for Christmas now. That's
get me a spurtle. But these days it's all about the overnight oats, isn't it?
What's that?
Well, people put these oats in overnight and then the next day they have it and it's I think it's been in the fridge all night or something.
Right.
Clearly you guys don't know. I was hoping you'd know more than I do.
Yeah.
I just got the title there. Something I heard on the Ethos.
I'm really sorry. I'm so sorry that my news articles have taken us to a point of talking about making porridge. I'm so rusty. I'm so rusty that my news articles.
Well, congratulations on making the most boring Cryptid Factor comeback show since the comeback special, where they end up just old guys talking about porridge and reminiscing about wheat germ and spurtles.
Must get you a spurtle.
What a disaster. I remember when you guys used to be young and hip and talking about cool things like Bigfoot and Yeti. You've moved on. You've given up on the dream. What happened to the Cryptid Factor? All right, Dan, it's up to you to save us. What have you
Please
got?
Please save us.
Okay, well, super quickly, the first one, which is the less interesting one to an extent. So hippos have been recognized as humans in Colombia. So Pablo Escobar.
The drug lord.
Yeah. When he was killed in 1993, he had a bunch of hippos that he'd bought and that were living on his ranch. And they were and there were like flamingos and giraffes and kangaroos. He had the whole menagerie. Yeah. They were sold to zoos, but they didn't collect them all. And they've just been roaming Colombia for ages.
And the population got bigger and bigger with these hippos.
They're huge.
They've got so many of them there now.
Exactly. So this is a big problem. So they want to cull them. And there's a lot of conservationists who don't want them to be culled. So they filed an application, and as a result of it, they have been recognized as humans, which means you can't cull humans. So,
oh, I see. It's murder.
Yeah. So what they're going to try and do is do a non-surgical sterilization on them so that maybe they can't reproduce going forward. And this is the community
now. Good luck
now.
On getting close to those hippos.
Oh, yeah. Crazy, right?
Like, dangerous animal.
Yeah. So right now there are not animals roaming, but human hippos roaming.
Wow, that's a weird thing to have to do.
Yeah.
Because they don't look anything like humans. And there's no way people are going to go, you know... What if you end up in court, you accidentally shot one or something like that, and you could say, look, I'm sorry, I thought it was a human. And they'll be like, what are you talking about? Look at the size, it's a hippo. It's a giant sea-dwelling mammal, water-dwelling.
I don't know if I want to go there necessarily, but if it's officially and legally considered a human now.
Mm. Oh, I see where you're going. You're going to try and marry it.
Yeah. you can't you? You would literally legally be able to.
That's a great thing because we know on this show we've talked to and spoken of people who have married weird objects, including trees, lamps.
That's right.
You know, various things. So let's get it out there and let's get these hippos married. Let's partner them up with other humans.
Yes.
Maybe that's the punishment. If you do accidentally shoot one and you're in court, you could say, look, I'll tell you what, I thought it was a human. I got it wrong, but clearly it was a human. I'll marry it. Yeah, you can either go to jail for the rest of your life for first degree murder on this human hippo, or you can marry it. And I would also clarify, it is dead because you did shoot it. Do you take this dead hippo to be your lawfully wedded wife? Yes. If it gets me out of jail, yes. All right. Well, good luck on mounting it on your wedding night. On the wall. Get down. Come on, you guys. I miss the days we were talking about porridge.
Yeah.
And then we started talking about fucking dead hippos. I mean, honestly, the show's gone all over the place now.
Talk about rusty. No, but it's actually a brilliant strategy, right, to be able to start to protect things.
It's a good idea, Buttons, until we fall into a new controversy when a hippo wins the Human of the Year competition, controversially.
On the front of Time magazine.
Yeah,
like Human of the Year. This is amazing hippo. Have you seen how many vaccines he's invented? He's donated millions of dollars to schools and underfed humans around the world.
And then he controversially enters himself into Bird of the Year award the next year. I got birds in my bag. Yeah, but they're not part of you. You're not the bird. Well, I think I am. I don't know if I agree with this thing of like turning things into classifying things as human to make them better, because aren't we like the worst example of species on the planet?
Yeah, exactly. That's not something to be aspiring to. And we're forcing them.
Oh, now who's rusty, folks? Look, old touring guy.
The rust is spreading.
I'm glad I'm spreading our rust back into your London mic setup.
Well, I've got just very quickly because we almost wrapped up the weird news, but I did mention the biggest private collection of magic memorabilia. So
let's kick in with that one.
Just quickly to wrap up on that. So there's a new book out which is called David Copperfield's History of Magic, and it turns out that David Copperfield has. He is the owner of the private collection of magic memorabilia. Oh, it's the largest in the world. It's in Las Vegas in this big David Copperfield compound that he has out there. He bought all the private collections of previous people who've collected other magician stuff. He's got the largest Houdini collection of magic artifacts. And so it's not open to the public, but what you do is you go and book a visit with him if there's relevance. So when Christopher Nolan was doing The Prestige, he went and he got a tour around it by David Copperfield. And so the outside, he's made it, Hugh Jackman, who went to see it for the P.T. Barnum Greatest Showman movie did.
That's a great movie.
He went to it and he said the front of it, it's a facade and it looks like a sex shop. And Forbes described it as looking like a mail order lingerie shop. And once you go inside,
dodgy.
Yeah, but it's so cool. Once you go inside, he has made it so the first bit you walk into is a replica of the very first magic shop that he went to as a kid, based on photos and memories. So you walk in and it's the old counters and the glass cabinets and stuff. And it's just amazing that this place exists, but you can't really go and visit it. It's a museum, but for magicians, basically.
Another one of their secret places that we don't really hear about until now, of course, but even then can't really get to it. And I thought, as you were saying that, when you a couple of obvious gags that you missed, David Copperfield? That was a mistake. That's an old one. That's a classic. David Copperfield is putting out a new book. Or is he?
Oh.
That would have been the first one I would have gone for.
Oh,
other one is... I've had 15 minutes to go and think about this. No. The other one was, you know, he's got this place. You know how he's famous for these illusions?
Yeah.
He can literally make something disappear. Like, didn't he make, like, the Empire State Building disappear?
Yes.
That's right. Yep.
Well, I know he did something in Las Vegas too, whether it was a 747 jumbo jet or something like that.
It was a plane, yeah.
Just through illusion. So he could, surely he could do that with his place. So you could go, there it is, just go up there. And then all of a sudden it'll disappear.
That's genius.
But I like how he has got this false front on it. But also, wouldn't that encourage people who are into sort of women's lingerie
to
sort of go in there?
It's really weird. I don't know if it, because I think it's within a Copperfield compound, so I think it's sort of like you couldn't get to it anyway.
You can't really even get that close to
it.
Oh, so he's hiding it from, if it's in his own compound. He's hiding it from himself behind it. He's trying to trick himself, isn't he? He's like, shit, I've lost it again. Where did I put that bloody museum?
What am I into again? Oh, that's right. I'm into women's lingerie.
Why have I got a women's lingerie shop here?
This is it. Oh, there's the old magic shop from my childhood. Oh, this will be it. Hang on. There's nothing here.
The one part that I want to just go back to, because when you said in the headline at the start, to get into it, there's a hidden button within the bra of one of the mannequins. Like, what? Where is the hidden button in the bra? That's like,
I know, it's very very Adam West Batman, isn't it? To get to the the bat pole.
It's on a bust, and you push the nipple, and a door opens, right?
Yeah,
but you don't know which one you're pushing. Well, there's only two options.
But then, of course, if you're trying to break in, imagine you're a thief going, I'm going to break in and steal all of David Copperfield's magic stuff. And you know this information because you listen to the Cryptid Factor and you sneak on in there. And then to go and try and break in, you're going up to all of these mannequins and pushing their nipples.
Just
pushing
their boobs.
You're going to look a little bit dodgy.
And he's captured all of that on his in-store camera.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's got a little microphone. He goes, let me guess, you listen to the latest Cryptid Factor? Over this microphone.
Oh, man.
It's so weird, though. He's, you know, Penn and Teller, they live in, well, Penn lives in Las Vegas as well. They all have these weird, quirky houses. So his, I think he's sold it now, but his house was called the Slammer, and he designed it to look exactly like a prison. So it had prison guard stuff on the outside. It had like a yard with all the like exercise, you know,
that's
bars.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's so weird. These guys are like, I love them, but like, what quirky decisions. David Copperfield, this has blown my mind today. I've been reading about this all day. He bought a bunch of islands in the Bahamas, and he said while he was there, he found in one of the lakey bits of it, the Fountain of Youth. He claims the elixir of life is there. He said when a dead plant would go in it, it would rejuvenate to be a living one. If a dying insect went into it, it would suddenly come back to full life and fly off. And he's had biologists test it out, but he doesn't want to expose it to the world yet. This was back in 2006. And supposedly on his island, he's got the Fountain of Youth. Yeah.
Is that why he stays so young? He's looking so good.
That's a good point, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not quite as good as the point of how do we get into his magic place.
Why? I don't... Well, that's a big point, isn't it? That's a big point at a nipple. That's just a real easy one.
So he owns these islands. So therefore, yeah, if he has found it, you wouldn't really get permission to go and find it yourself. You'd be trespassing. So that's interesting.
Well, yeah. Hang on as well. Is this just him as a marketing ploy wanting to get into the bottled water market? Because if he starts this thing, and you got literally water from the fountain of youth, like, imagine that. True. That'd be a great angle. Or do you? Oh, wow. Well, man, that's really cool, guys. What an awesome Weekly World Weird News session. We've covered off bats pretending to be birds, old woman pretending to be young, porridge pretending to be arancini, David Copperfield pretending to have a fountain of youth, and hippos pretending to be
humans. Yeah.
Wow. What a wow.
That's a cool new segment. Buttons' wrap-up segment. The end of...
Thank God for that, because I didn't know what we'd just been speaking about the last half an hour.
I'm just pointing out that it's all very old man-ish, isn't it?
There's still a chance for us to save this show with some cryptid news, albeit relatively old. But you brought it up at the start of the show, so let's go into it. Let's do Cryptid Buzz.
Attention, all personnel. It's time for this week's cryptid... help me!
Now, I know it's been a few weeks and there's been many articles come through, especially from the Cryptid Knights, who are now, I'm sure, at a point of just stop sending us stuff because it's not going anywhere. But look, please don't stop. It is going into our heads and in one head and out the other. And then if you're lucky, into the other guy's head and then out his one. And then Dan's too busy to capture anything in his head right now. But... So here's an article here, which is dated September 2021. So a few weeks ago, but it's very relevant because, of course, it is about Nessie showing up on sonar.
Mm.
So here we go. It's part of the edinburghlive.co.uk website system.
Good website system, that one.
A visitor to the Highlands claims to have caught Nessie swimming deep in the murky waters. The third time the prehistoric resident has been caught this year over the summer period. The spotter, named by the official Loch Ness Monster Sightings Register as Brandon Scallion, claims to have recorded a sound image of a creature rumoured to be between 3 to 4 metres, which is around 9 to 13 feet, for those living in America still, long below the waves. Mr. Scanlon was travelling on the Nessie Hunter vessel, which I've been on. According to the register, during the latest sighting on August 26th, Benjamin Scanlon was on holiday with his family and took a trip on the Nessie Hunter of Loch Ness Cruises. He spotted something on the sonar on the boat and caught the image. Oh, wow, the image looks pretty good. I've just checked it out. Spoiler alert for myself. Captain Mike of the boat estimated it to be 3 to 4 meters in length at a depth of about 20 meters while the boat was in water about 40 meters deep. Now, plesiosaurs typically grow to a length of around 11 feet according to fossil records, placing its size right in the middle of the captain's estimate. Do you want to see the image?
Yeah.
Oh, no. okay,
here it is.
Oh, wow, it looks like a big orange snake.
No, that's the bottom of the lock. You're looking at just above that.
That's
at the 40-meter mark. If you look between 40 and the surface, which is 20, okay, halfway up, you'll see that large.
That's you know what it looks like? Like a dude in a scuba gear swimming along with his legs kicking out the back.
It does not. You can see the full girth of the body and even the long neck. Look at that.
Oh, that is a full girth.
Oh, yeah, it's got the bend. It's got the neck bend.
Yeah.
It's got the neck
bend. It does too. Oh, yeah, if that was the front. But yeah, right, if that's the big body in the middle, that's good. That's really good. See, that's pretty impressive. But don't they once, I remember when I was a kid, there was somebody who had an attempt at sonaring the entire lock and having a line of boats all with sonar on go from one end of the lock to the other all in one run to try and find Nessie that way. And they couldn't find Nessie. But I was really disheartened with that. I was like, oh, they've just gone and proven that it doesn't exist. Right. But here we go. It goes to show. I mean, there could be cave systems there. If this plesiosaur goes down and lies on the bottom of the lock, sonar ain't going to pick that up, right?
But is it doing that because it knows it's being sonared? Or does it happen? Is that just timing that it happens to be
just
laying?
Bad luck? Yeah.
Right, bad luck.
Or good luck.
Or good luck, yeah.
Yeah. In the case the only things that know they're being sonared, Dan, are submarines with technological equipment.
It's my point. It's my point. It's too convenient that it would be laying on the ground.
Now, I was about to click on another link here, but unfortunately it's taken so long between the link happening and the next show happening that it comes up on my screen. This site can't be reached.
No.
So that was a shame. I was going to have a chat about the woolly mammoth situation. So if any of you have got any updates on that, because they are trying to bring that mammoth back, and that's been in the news recently.
No, I haven't seen that.
You mean like DNA, bring it, like rebuild it, we can recreate them?
Yeah, we talked about it years ago, but now they've progressed to actually really on the verge of doing it.
Like cloning, making a clone of it.
Yeah, well, if I had the article, I'd be able to tell you.
Well, I do have an article here that says scientists say they could bring back woolly mammoths, but maybe they shouldn't. Does it sound like that?
Definitely sounds in the ballpark.
Okay, well, it says here that they, using recovered DNA to genetically resurrect an extinct species, the central idea behind the Jurassic Park films, may be moving closer to reality with the creation this week of a new company that aims to bring back woolly mammoths thousands of years after the last giants disappeared from the Arctic tundra. Flush with a $15 million infusion of funding, Harvard University's genetics professor George Church, known for his pioneering work in genome sequencing and gene splicing, hopes the company can usher in an era where mammoths walk the Arctic tundra again.
Researchers
have hoped that a revived species can play a role in combating climate change. How does bringing back the woolly mammoth help climate change? All they're going to do is eat like polar bears or whatever and poo them out and then, you know, have more. How does that work?
No, it's for the biodiversity of Siberia. That's where they want to put them.
Right. Okay. I haven't read that far down the article.
They're going to keep more living things living by introducing a huge thing to the food chain.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
That's interesting.
And guess what the name of the company is called, guys?
Ooh. What?
Colossal.
Nice.
That's great. What a great
name. They want to place thousands of these magnificent beasts back on the Siberian tundra. Wouldn't that be amazing?
That would be so freaking cool, because then, like, you start with the woolly mammoth, and where do you stop? Colossal could literally start the Jurassic Park, because they have DNA from dinosaurs, right?
Yeah.
Do we? I don't know.
Yeah, and of course humans were around when the woolly mammoth was around. Okay, and there's been even some theories that back then there was also the pteranodons were still around, which leads me to this point, because I've actually got one here with me. Have I had another excuse to do this?
Your butterfly fingers. It's the Beast Army's butterfly fingers.
Part of the year.
I think what he's actually doing is a shadow puppet in the middle of the day with no shadows. Well, funnily enough, your story wonderfully links back, almost as if you planned this, back to our very first story about
porridge.
maybe woolly mammoth porridge. They could be one of the future spurtles. No, is that what they're arguing? People say that we should not be bringing back extinct animals, but that Colossal should be using this technology to help endangered species from going extinct. So taking this DNA and actually creating and making more of the animals, like the bat the size of a thumb that won the bird competition, like the new human animal?
The hippo.
Thank you. Yeah, the hippo. That one.
Here's the last thing I'll say from this New York Times article anyway about the mammoth situation. Today, the tundra of Siberia and North America, where the animals once grazed, is rapidly warming and releasing carbon dioxide. Mammoths are hypothetically a solution to this, Dr. Church argued in his talk. Today, the tundra is dominated by moss, but when woolly mammoths were around, it was largely grassland. Some researchers have argued that that woolly mammoths were ecosystem engineers, maintaining the grasslands by breaking up moss, knocking down trees, and providing fertilizer with their droppings.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
I wonder whether they, just to link back into our earlier stories as well, if they did remove all these human hippos from where they are and dropped all of those buggers off in the tundra, whether they might help provide some eco-diversity stabilization, or would they be just hanging out for the rivers? Surely there's rivers there.
Get your own river. you know, the awesome thing that they're doing is that to bring the mammoth back, they're using the live DNA from Asian elephants.
Okay. Yeah.
They've come up with a term for this new animal. It's a mammophant, which is genius, which I love. I mean, if I have to choose between a mammoth or an elephant or a mammophant, I know which one I'd be choosing as a pet if that was an option. But the best thing is that there's Matthew Cobb, a professor of zoology at the University of Manchester, told The Guardian that he's very concerned. He says, you know, the proposed de-extinction of mammoths raise a massive ethical issue.
Uh-huh.
The mammoth was not only a set of genes, it was a social animal, as is the modern Asian elephant. He says, what will happen when the elephant-mammoth hybrid is born? He asked the questions, how will it be greeted by elephants?
Ah.
And it's like, well, I don't know how to greet elephants. Well, they're like, hi. They certainly can't shake hands. So I don't know, why is it important of how they will be greeted? Just keep them apart. Why do they need to have a greeting?
Mm.
I also think he's forgetting that in the animal kingdom, animals actually get on or they just move on.
Yeah,
you know, let's go, whatever. That famous old animal adage, get on or move on. You've probably heard the song. Get on or move on. It's the way we're gonna be. Get on or move on. From bumblebee to the biggest, giantest mammoth creature that you've ever seen. If we don't get on, we simply move on. And that's what we'll always be. Moving and grooving, moving. Shaking and raving. Having a good time.
Shaking and a raving.
Existing in the world today. Break it down. You break it down now. Break it down if you want to.
What is the structure of this song?
Break it down now. You break it down if you want to. Doesn't look like anybody wants to. So we're not gonna bother breaking it down.
What genre of music was that in again?
It was like seven different genres. And also introduced, which I've never, Reese has done a lot of songs with a lot of beats in the background. I've never heard you use a sniff as a drum beat before. It was like a snare drum. It was amazing. You're doing, it was awesome. Well, I got one more cryptid story just to lob in, and it's very on message for what we're talking about with de-extinction and extinction and missing animals. The holy grail of giant owls that hasn't been seen for 150 years has been photographed in Ghana. It's found again.
Yes!
Yeah, so an animal we thought was gone, and it is an owl that's called Shelley's Eagle Owl. Not after Mary Shelley, I don't think. It's also called Bubo Shelley. It's got a body that measures between 21 and 24 inches, a wing length of 16.5 to 19.4 inches, and it weighs about 2.7 pounds. And this is a bird that was thought to have gone extinct, and it was witnessed by Dr. Joseph Tobias, who's from the Department of Life Sciences at Imperial College from London, so who must have been over there. So, yeah, they can confirm that it is around this presumably gone animal.
Oh, that's awesome.
Pretty amazing.
Well, that's perfect because we're talking about extinction. We're talking about animals that are, you know, winning birds of the year because their numbers are running low. Some are really in danger. So we're adding them to the list, even though they're not even birds. And yet now at the end of this episode, we're finding a bird that is back.
That's so good.
It's awesome to have good news like that.
Yeah.
Especially in 2021, you know, not known for its good news.
It really isn't. It really isn't.
Do we have a picture or something to look at?
I've got a drawing. So
an artist impression?
An artist impression is what I have because it landed on
I think
on
I might actually have one here. I was just going to say.
Hello.
I'm not sure whether you guys have seen it, but there's one. It's just coming in from the side here.
Did you have one as a pet all this time? You just had one.
Well, this is it. This is Shelley's eagle owl.
Wow.
My sister's Shelley. Stop it. Oh, it's good. It's nice. My sister Shelley, we've had this pet for quite a while, actually, and she wanted me to take it back to the States. Get out of it.
Wasn't it called Shadow Puppet Shelley? Eagle owl?
I have to confess, the only reason I'm doing a lot of these puppetry bird pieces, which I know aren't great for the audio, but the truth is I am promoting my new comedy special, Mystic Time Bird, which is now available on all good platforms. So please watch. And for the first time on any of my shows, this is the fifth comedy special I've done, by the way, it is now available on audio only, if you like.
Wow! Which is
so amazing for one of the world's greatest physical performers.
Is there somebody sort of giving a little sort of commentary on the side? Now, what he's doing now is he's walking very funnily. He's putting his legs up very high.
Funnily?
Putting them down, planting his feet. Oh, God, it's very funny.
Yeah. Hello and welcome to You Had to Be There. Now, you watch him come out on stage. He's walking. He's doing one of his funny walks. He's about to do a stand-up. Good evening. He's just said good evening.
Director's commentary.
Yeah.
Wow, I have to say that was a really amazing comeback, guys.
Mm.
Season 17, it's going to be great if it continues at this rate.
I mean, I would say, I'd go so far as to say if it continues, that would be more groundbreaking than anything we've ever done in the last few weeks. Okay. That's it for this week. Like I said, go out there, see my special. It's on all the platforms. And other than that, couldn't care less. I'm just promoting that, really. No. We vow right here in front of your ears now that we will try and get this back to a regular thing because it's good for us and it's good for you. It's good for the geese. It's good for the gander. It's good for there's nothing it's not good for.
It's good for a sore if you've got an open sore. Or some kind of wound. It's good for that. Just rub it in. Good for that. It's good for a soup. Put it in as an additive in your soup.
I honestly think we should go door to door and just try and sell our podcast to people in a little tin. If you've got any issues, you can rub it on. You know, if you rub it on a certain area, it might bring woolly mammoths back. If you've got a mammoth and you want to get rid of it, rub it on there. It might go away. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Till next time, season 18.
Oh, I wonder when that will be.
2 months time.
Catch you next year.
Okay, bye. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.